Cool. Hello, everyone. I'm Elias Cepeda. Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of the Extra Rounds podcast. As you'll notice, unfortunately, I'm without my co-host, Mike Dice. He had to tend to some other affairs today. Mike, we miss you. Hope you're watching. We do have a really good interview that'll go up on the audio upload on iTunes and Google Play, that version, later today. A great interview that Mike did with Yair Rodriguez, who is headlining opposite BJ Penn this weekend. Big main event in Phoenix, Arizona, UFC Fight Night. I think it's UFC Fight Night 103. Yair is based nowadays out of Chicago, where we're based out of as well. He's originally from Mexico. He's also done some training at Greg Jackson's and Mike Winklejohn's camp in New Mexico. And interestingly enough, his opponent has been training partially out of that camp as well. So Mike had a really awesome conversation pre-recorded earlier this week to work around Yair's schedule during fight week. It's a very busy time for fighters. They're cutting weight. They're doing a lot of media, trying to focus on the biggest night of their life. But Mike did a really, really great conversation. That'll be up on the audio version up on iTunes and Google Play and all the other places. We were up later this afternoon. So even if you're watching now, which we thank you for, we want you to check in later to hear later this week to hear from Yair Rodriguez and his conversation with my co-host, Mike Dice. We've got a bunch of stuff to talk about today. And most notably, we have a live guest in about, we'll go right to him in about 10 minutes. We got Dean Thomas. Dean Thomas, for you newer fans of MMA, there were a number of years, probably like 5 to 7 years, in which Dean Thomas is one of, if not the best lightweight fighters in the world. Unfortunately for him, that was at a time when the UFC didn't really emphasize the lightweight division, and partially there was a period of time as well where they just outright did away with the 155-pound division. This was a time when the whole sport of MMA wasn't getting the attention that it does now. The UFC wasn't even the biggest organization in the MMA world. So he and other great fighters like Eve Edwards, who's been on the show, or Josh Thompson, or now embattled Hermes Franca, a bunch of guys, BJ Penn, Jens Pulver, these folks had to struggle. Carl Uno had to struggle and really entertain in relative obscurity. But Dean Thomas was one of the all-time greats in the lighter weight divisions. He has moved on to really successful second and third careers as well. He's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, a great all-around fighter, and he's used that knowledge to become one of the best coaches in MMA. He's been on the show before, as has one of his great friends and American Top Team teammate, Mike Brown, who's also a coach there. Those guys are some of the busiest coaches in all of MMA. American Top Team has more fighters signed to the UFC, I believe this is still true, than any other camp. They're out of South Florida there, American Top Team. And guys like Dean Thomas are cornering more fighters than just about anyone. You go to any UFC event, there's a good chance you'll see Dean Thomas or Mike Brown cornering not just one, but maybe two or three different fighters on that card. Dean is super technical, really, really knowledgeable, a lot of fun as well. And you know, that's his, let's say, maybe a second career. He also has a third career in broadcasting and analysis and entertainment. He is one of the hosts, the fun guy host on Dana White's Looking for a Fight YouTube reality series that the UFC does. They're in their second season. I just watched their first episode of the second season earlier today. I think it came out maybe about a week ago. It's a lot of fun. If you haven't seen it, you want to see it. It's where guys like Sage Northcutt or Mickey Gall came from. Dana White goes out scouting at smaller regional events, and he takes along now Matt Serra and Dean Thomas, former fighters, great coaches, top coaches, and friends of Dana White. They scout different fighters, regional fighters, and try to get someone that's good enough to move up to the UFC, move up to the big leagues, and they also do other crazy stuff. In this episode, they're shooting guns and driving go-karts and all sorts of other nonsense in Dana White's Bangor, Maine estate. They're eating food, doing all sorts of crazy stuff. Dean Thomas is doing that, and he's a really good fit. He wasn't on the first part of the first series. There was Nick the Tooth was joined Dana White and Matt Serra, and actually fell out in something that was pretty celebrated at the time. Dean Thomas came and replaced him, and it's still going well. Really good fit. So we're going to be excited to talk with Dean Thomas in just a couple minutes. We have several other topics we want to talk about as well today. A lot has been going on. We didn't talk about it last week. I really would like to talk about it at some point, though, and we'll make that time now. Mike Goldberg called his probably his last UFC event at UFC 207, a gigantic event. He started with the UFC as a play-by-play commentator, as the main play-by-play commentator, broadcast commentator, back in 1997. Before that, he did broadcasts for like Chicago Bulls, hockey, professional hockey, all sorts of other big stuff. But yeah, he was there for 19 years and was one of, if not the real voice of the UFC broadcast, at least the big-time broadcast. Obviously, the UFC grew to the point where they had not just pay-per-view events, but network television, cable, all sorts of fight pass. So there are other play-by-play guys that are really solid that the UFC has. But under new ownership, the UFC was sold this past summer to WMEIMG, Hollywood Talent Agency giant. And there's been a lot of changes, a lot of people leaving, a lot of people getting replaced, from fighters up to people behind the scenes and in front of the camera. And Mike Goldberg, under circumstances that he hasn't really spoken of, no one's really spoken details of, he's gone now from the UFC. If you haven't done it, check out Tommy Toehold. Tommy Toehold on YouTube.com, generally speaking. Specifically, he has a great tribute. Tommy Toehold does this cartoon character that satirizes MMA and issues just in a sublime way. And he has one of Mike Goldberg using Mike Goldberg's catchphrase when fights are finished abruptly and excitingly, it's all over. And it's pretty hilarious. It pokes some fun at Mike Goldberg, which Mike Goldberg is always good at doing himself. But it also shows a real appreciation for what he's done. Among so-called self-proclaimed hardcore fans, Mike Goldberg would always get a lot of flack. He's sitting there with Joe Rogan at these events for literally, I don't know how much you watch at home. Maybe you just watch the main card. Maybe you just watch the main event. I don't know. But if you're covering the events or if you're calling the events, you're there for 7 hours of talking. Or if you're a journalist, right, 7 hours of writing. So Mike Goldberg, with producers in his ear, chattering away, having to do ads, having to mention this factoid, that factoid, promote this brand, that brand, and call the fights in front of him. He was doing that for 7 hours straight. So yeah, sometimes he said some funny, silly things. But I'm going to miss Mike Goldberg, and here's why. Mike Goldberg is the best play-by-play broadcast commentator that the sport of MMA has yet to have. It's easy to criticize, and it's harder to find a better alternative, right? Back in the day, there was Pride. There was Pride and there was UFC. Pride was based out of Japan. They were huge. They had 60,000 seat arenas. They were televised on terrestrial television in Japan, had pay-per-view distribution in the United States. They were huge. They had a number of really good color commentators, guys like Bas Rutten, former heavyweight champion of the world. Randy Couture would come in and guest, and a lot of people came in and did some good color commentary. Their play-by-play people switched often as well. And when Mike Goldberg has been criticized on internet forums and things like that, a lot of times people mention some of the guys that worked, they were all men, that worked and Pride did play-by-play. It's in comparison to people like that, some of whom are still working in big time boxing, professional wrestling, it's comparison to those people that Mike Goldberg's real value really comes to light. Mike Goldberg, for all his faults like anyone has, for saying this thing, silly thing, or that silly thing, or mispronouncing a name like I have so much trouble doing myself, he always showed enthusiasm for the fight. Sounded like he was excited to be there. He also always respected the fighters. Now, that should be a given, right? And deferring to the expertise of your broadcast partner, in his case, oftentimes Joe Rogan or guest people would come in. Deferring to the expertise of your color guy who's there, usually as some type of martial artist or former fighter or current fighter expert. He always did that. He always respected the fighters. That should be a given, but it isn't. Some of these other guys that have big names like Mike Goldberg and MMA play-by-play commentary, I'll mention two specific things. One, I remember him calling fighters a cockroaches during a match. I remember another one on national television saying how he wanted to have, while Gino Carano was fighting, former featherweight champion, talking about how he wanted to have sex with her. These guys were just really largely unprofessional. They largely were disrespectful of what they were watching, to say nothing of not really informed or aware of what they were watching. Mike Goldberg was not an MMA fighter, an MMA expert. He watched a lot of fights. He was excited about all of them. He really deferred to the expertise of the real experts, and he always respected the fighters. And you know what? He really did seem to love the sport. It wouldn't be uncommon. Weeks of, you go to cover a UFC event in the fighter hotel, there's some practice rooms set up. Wouldn't it be uncommon for me to see Mike Goldberg there with some coaches hitting mitts, picking their brain, getting a workout in, saying, hey, can you guys hold pads for me, hold mitts for me? And he'd work out with them. He'd ask them technical questions. You know, the guy put in the time. The guy put in the time, and he had a lot of respect, and he has a lot of respect for the sport and for the people involved. And for that reason, I think he was phenomenal. I think he was a huge asset to the sport. I'm sorry to see him go. I think it's a mistake for him to go. Hopefully he'll have plenty of options moving forward. But, you know, I'm going to miss Mike Goldberg, and some of you all might as well eventually, even if you don't realize it now. But we're going to move shortly on. We're going to see if Dean Thomas is available. That was my not-so-brief shtick on appreciating someone who I think is not appreciated nearly enough in Mike Goldberg. We wish Mike all the best. I'm going to try to get Dean Thomas on the line here in a moment. Let's see if he's around. All righty. Giving him a ring now.
Hello.
Dean, this is Elias, X-Rons Podcast. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, man. What's happening? What's popping?
You are, man. Thanks so much for being on the show, man. I'm here without my co-host, Mike Dice, so it's just going to be you and me chopping it up a little bit, man. But Happy New Year.
No doubt. Happy New Year to you, too.
Thanks, man. So there's a lot I want to chat with you about. I know you got a lot going on. I just watched episode 1 of season 2 Looking for a Fighter. Love the show.
Yes.
I love the show.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. I'm going to ask you a bit about that. And I also want to go back to some of the fighters, some of the people you coach and spend time with, specifically Amanda Nunes. And I want to talk a little bit about her fight with Ronda Rousey as well. I heard you on Unfiltered podcast, Matt Serra and Matt Serra's really good podcast, and you had some interesting stuff. I want to dig a little deeper into that. But first, cool. I got to say this. So I didn't talk with you before UFC 207, Dean, but I did talk with Mike Brown. I talked with Conan Silvera, coaches at American Top Team. I talked with some of Amanda's teammates like Alex Chambers. And I've said this. I've written this a little bit. Dean, in 12 years of covering the sport, you know, we talk to a lot of people, and everyone is always saying, yeah, you know, our guy's going to win, our gal's going to win, right? Everyone always says that. They're confident, sure, of course. But everyone, every coach always, indirectly or directly, always, you know, admits, hey, we don't really know what's going to happen for sure, right? Like, anything could happen in a fight.
Right, for sure, yeah.
Now, when I spoke to America, I didn't say this beforehand, but when I spoke to ATT coaches and teammates of Amanda Nunes, they absolutely struck me as the most confident coaches and teammates that I've ever talked to leading into a fight, the months and weeks leading into a fight ever in my 12 years covering the sport. I mean, Amanda, of course, was saying, hey, I'll beat Ronda and I'll give her a rematch. Coaches were saying the same thing. I just, you know, they were polite, but man, it bordered on like just complete assurance that they were going to win. What did you guys know about Amanda that made you all so confident? I'm imagining you were very confident as well heading into the fight.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, we knew Amanda was just a different type of athlete. And, you know, Ronda had put herself in such a pedestal that we had no choice but to pay attention to her. And I did an extensive research of Ronda, and I just thought it was just a total bad matchup. It was a mismatch from the jump just based on skill sets alone. And, you know, and I hate to say that, but, you know, and I hate to feel like I'm taking something away from Ronda because she did a lot for women's MMA. But, I mean, you know, it was just really a mismatch. And I don't think that she'd ever be able to beat Amanda. And I always thought that Amanda possessed all the tools that was needed to beat somebody like Ronda Rousey.
Tell me some of the specific things you saw. I thought it was a bad matchup for Ronda, but I wasn't so sure, Coach, that hey, you know, Amanda definitely is going to be able to defend the takedown all fight long, or she'll definitely be able to defend the armbar if she heads up on the ground? Like, what were some specific things that made you really confident? Were you confident that Amanda was not going to get caught up in a clinch? Were you confident that she'd be able to defend the armbar on the ground if she got there? What did you see specifically?
Well, the biggest thing was that Amanda possesses tremendous footwork. She comes from a background where she played soccer, so her feet are really good. And so she moves very well. So if Ronda needed to get close, she had to be able to come into that range. Now, Ronda hasn't been known to be a shooter. She's a clincher.
Right.
And in order to clinch, you have to come in and punch in range. And I didn't think she'd be able to come in and punch in range fast enough to clinch with Amanda. And if she did, we prepared to block the takedown anyway. So, I mean, there was a lot that she would have had to get Amanda on the ground to even worry about the armbar.
Hmm. Yeah, I want to talk about that. You talked about Ronda not being a shooter. I wrote a quick article for Champions, saying, you know, hey, these are four reasons that Ronda lost after the fact, right? And there were things that we talked about before. Yeah. And one of the things I thought, I said, okay, if she in this year off, one of the things she needs to do is have different and better takedown entries, right? And one of the things I talked about is I hope for her sake that she was going to come in at different levels. She always comes in high for the clinch. She never shows different levels. And I felt that was one of the reasons that Miesha Tate, who got taken down a lot by Ronda over two fights, and was able to take down Holly Holm, who Ronda was not able to take down, and who actually got woman handled a little bit there. I said, well, Miesha is not a more dominant takedown artist than Ronda Rousey, coach, but she is a more varied and diverse takedown artist, right? She can go from the ankle, she can go for, you know, for a double or a single, she can come in high for a clinch. What's the importance now that everyone has seen Ronda fight for a long time of her coming in at just one level and her one type of entry, jabbing away high? What did that allow you guys to do from a strategic point of view?
Well, I mean, it's very predictable. I mean, as you just said, I mean, if you know what's coming, if I'm playing poker against somebody and you know what hand they have, it's like, you know when to fold and you know what to do when somebody does that. So we prepared a couple of different strategies when that happens. So, I mean, and that was kind of all it was really kind of easy, actually. Mm. And then, I mean, you obviously prepare for other things just in case. But when you look at her fights and you go, wow, this is really the only thing that she does. How has nobody not figured this out? How, like, if you notice she does this, why are they still running into her, allowing her to do this? And some cases, maybe, you know what, maybe the girl that she's fighting just doesn't have footwork to stay away from her. Or she doesn't have the punching power to even threaten her a little bit. Or she doesn't have the reach, which Amanda does have punching power and reach. So she had all those aspects to be able to defend that type of takedown. So it was very easy in that sense to just go, man, this is really a bad match. I mean, just a mismatch, really. And I know it didn't look like it on paper, but when you do the study of it, it's like, this is really a mismatch.
It's interesting. Are you all still open to the rematch if somehow the UFC forces Ronda and drags her in to another fight?
Yeah, I'm like, you know, I mean, again, not to take anything away from Ronda, but it's easy money. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's easy money. It's like, it's a given. Because what'll happen is okay, maybe she'll learn to shoot, but she won't be good enough to do it to take Amanda down.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, now she'll be, it's like, okay, our quarterback is hurt. Let's put the center in to play quarterback. Won't be good enough. So, yeah, if you want a rematch, we can run it back, but that's easy money. That's an easy payday.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said something. Now, I can't remember the term. You were on UFC Unfiltered, Norton and Matt Serra's podcast, and you said something about, I think you said, you used the term progressive thinking and not being a progressive thinker in relation to Edmund Tarvidian, Ronda Rousey's coach. You didn't bash him. You didn't say, hey, you didn't pretend to know everything he does or anything like that, but you said, I think you said, correct me if I'm wrong, that he's not a progressive enough thinker for MMA for her to win. Tell me a little bit what you meant by that.
Well, I mean, if you look at all her fights, she hasn't gotten better. You know, I mean, she's beaten girls and fast, but if you look at her progression as a fighter, she never got better. And then when you look at the fight against Holly, she was the same fighter that she was. It's just Greg Jackson did a really good job of preparing Holly for that fight. And then she came out again and fought Amanda the same way she did. She fought all her 12 other fights, actually 13 other fights. She never got any better. And to me, you blame the coach for that, because the coach has to be able to, they have to be able to get through to the athlete and go, hey, listen, we need to improve on things. We need to find better ways. Now, even if Ronda wasn't a shooter, that's okay. That's fine. But then as a coach, you have to find better ways for your athlete to be able to employ their offense. That's your job. That is what you do. The athlete's job is to listen to you. If you don't have that type of relationship, maybe you'll need to get out of that. Maybe you need to get out of that relationship. But as a coach, it's your job to be able to get through to your fighter and go, listen, we know that this is your strength. We need to find some better ways to get in to do it. And if you look at all her work, it looks like, you know, she does a lot of boxing, and she's able to sell it sometimes that she can box a little bit because her hands are fast. They hold the pads nice and close to her, and they make her feel good about herself. And there's something to that, you know, being positive about your training. There's something to that. But it lied to her. It made her think that she could strike. So, but it wasn't enough to overcome that gap. So, for me, it's just, you know, it's very amateurish to think that way. And luckily, he had, you know, a world-class athlete, Ronda, who was able to overcome her deficiencies with just her athleticism and that strong skill set that she does possess.
I got to put you on the spot a little bit here, Coach, because that's a really good analysis. I was going to ask, like, you know, speaking about that specifically, but not really specifically, just in your experiences, why? Because I'm sure you've seen this a million times or something like it. Why might a fighter stay with a coach or with someone that's not actually improving them? And so I was gonna ask you this. I don't have any relationship, professional or otherwise, with Edmund Tarvidian. I've never been in the room with him. I've just watched interviews. I've just seen the work that they show on television. But even from interviews, I always got a really weird vibe, Dean. Like, it just seems creepy, man. And then to hear the things that Ronda Rousey's mom said about him, everything from just looking at his criminal past of, you know, right before he trained with Ronda, he got convicted of, like, some type of fraud, like identity theft. Like, I read stuff on the internet, like some writers are saying, oh, well, no one was criticizing or saying anything about Edmund, or Dana White said no one was saying anything about Edmund when she was winning. That's not true. Maybe not publicly, but in conversations, people have been kind of weirded out or thought it was inadequate for a while. In addition to the non-progressive thinking, and to explain why someone might stay with someone who's not helping to improve, does that, from what you can tell, does that seem like a weird kind of setup there, or is that something you don't even want to talk about?
No, and I will gladly answer this. No, it's not, because, first off, like, when you win 12 fights in a row in the way that she did, sometimes you just ignore the fact that you're not getting better. Like, and then you just say, hey, listen, we got the W, good enough, let's keep going, I'm the best in the world. So you sometimes don't realize it, or you just ignore it. Now, when she lost, now that was the true testament of, all right, you know what, we probably should have been working some different things in order to get better. But the reality is this, I read something, I've been in a room with him, and he seemed like a nice enough guy to me, so none of this is personal, sure, what I'm saying. Now, one thing that I noticed about a lot of fighters is they base their training on how they feel. And I was just telling Charles Rosa yesterday, that is one of the worst things you can do. If you feel good about your training, that doesn't necessarily mean that what you're doing is right. And I also learned that a lot of fighters, because they're fighters, they always have to feel like they're going through some type of struggle, because the fight is, you know, it's a challenge for them, and they feel like, you know, they're a warrior, and they have to be going through this type of struggle. So when you get in an environment that is kind of hostile, whether the coach is being mean to you or yelling at you, sometimes that makes you just feel more like a fighter, because that's the way it's supposed to feel. But that doesn't mean it's right for you. And she may be one of them type of people to go, oh, I have to be in this environment because this is what fighters are supposed to go through. But that doesn't make it right, though. But that's how a lot of fighters feel. Mm. And they feel like they have to, you know, train the hardest and go through this hard struggle in order to get better. But I totally disagree with that. Some people it might work for, some people it might not work for. But the only thing that really counts are results. At the end of the day, the only thing that counts are results. If you're getting results doing that, stick with it. If you're not getting results doing that, you need to change it up. Mm.
Coach, you know, obviously you've been with American Top Team for a long time. You're one of the main coaches there. But you had a really long career of training, of fighting, even like before American Top Team was a thing. So I'm assuming you liked it there, right? Like I'm assuming you ended up there, you stayed there. What types of evolution did you go through? Did you go through periods of time where like you were in places doing training that you had to realize weren't either adequate or weren't doing the trick for you? Like what was that process like of finding throughout your career the right places to be?
Fight is different. So like for me, and this is something I learned early on in my career, that every fight was different. You had to prepare for fights differently. Because not only are you fighting a different person, but you are also growing and becoming a different person. Your body changes and your personality changes. So you have to constantly evaluate yourself accurately. And that's something a lot of fighters don't do as well. They don't evaluate themselves accurately. They just always feel that they're really good and they just need to, you know, lift some weights and hit some pads and they go out and fight. But throughout my entire career, I've always tried to keep up with the game and to stay fresh with it. And I think that my biggest flaw in the fight game was that I stopped doing that. And then I suffered some losses from that, not being creative and fresh. And I just, you know, I had the mentality of everybody else. At some point in my career, I adopted the mentality of everybody else and be hard. And I got to train like this guy because this these guys are doing. But at the end of the day, you kind of have to have somebody that's honest with you, and you kind of always evaluate yourself and go, what do I need to be better and what do I need in order to win this fight?
When did you decide, Dean, that you were going to become a coach? Like how did that process go?
Well, even while I was fighting, I've always had schools. I've had a couple of schools simultaneously, and I've always coached amateurs my entire existence as a fighter. I've always worked with fighters. So even when I was fighting, I would fight on the cards that I coached guys, and I'd corner them and then fight. So I've always dealt with fighters. And then when I had my gym, I did that. But I become a professional coach at this extent. They came down and helped them with the reality show when it was ATT versus the Black Zillions.
You cut out there for a second. You said when they did the tough Black Zillions versus ATT is when you really became like a full-time professional coach.
Right. Because prior to that, I had just worked with regional guys or amateurs. But then when it was the tough versus the Black ATT versus the Black Zillions tough episode series, then I became a professional coach.
That's interesting. You mentioned before we move on, you mentioned Rosa. I know he was on the show right before he went to Thailand. How's he doing, and what did he bring back a couple angles from Thailand with him?
He brought back something from Thailand. Rosa's a really good kid, and I've watched him grow up since an amateur. I've been around him his entire career, and he's a really good kid. And he treats the way he looks at MMA and his fight career is it's never changed. He's very progressive, and he's always trying to find better ways to do things, and he's always looking for new answers to problems that he's having. And I think that's the reason why he's so successful, because when it comes, and this is not a knock against him, but when it comes to like athletic ability, he's not the best athlete. He hasn't been doing this his entire life. It's his passion and his hunger for the sport that has kept him in so long. And I'm happy that he's still with it, and he's going to be fighting, I don't know, within the next couple of months. He told me he's going to be fighting soon. So
great.
And he asked me to help him out, and I'm all for it.
That's awesome. I'm glad he's finally getting another fight. It's kind of crazy. You look at since him and Yair Rodriguez fought a super close fight, it seems like Yair's had like 15 fights, and Rosa's had like one more. So I'm glad he's getting another one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but that's just, you know, that's just the way it goes sometimes in this game is, you know, Yair had a crazy run, and, you know, he deserves everything he's gotten. You know, Rosa had a few setbacks, so he's got to deal with that and see if he can bounce back.
Sure. So I want to move over now, Coach, to looking for a fighter, right? I just watched the first episode. For the people that haven't checked it out, the second season yet, talk a little bit about the crazy stuff you guys are getting into, man. I watched within the first 5 minutes, you and Sarah are racing some go-kart, shooting a gun. Like, I mean, what's going on this season, man?
Man, you know what it is? I'm just trying to keep up with these guys. You know, Dana White is an absolute animal, man. I think he's got one of the biggest misunderstood personalities, you know, in the game. I mean, he's an absolute animal. He's a really generous guy as well, and he likes to have fun, and he got us on the show just to have fun. So it's like, all right, guys, we're going to do this. Let's see how much fun you can have. So, you know, he let us in. So we go to his house in Maine. He's got a house in Maine, and he's like, all right, guys, anything you want to do, go ahead and do it. So we're like, we're riding go-karts, and he's got all these little toy cars. He's got a garage full of toy cars and go-karts and motorcycles and cars, and he's just like, the keys are in all of them. Take it whatever you want. And it's just like, oh, my goodness. So, yeah, we just had a really good time, man.
That's cool. I want to get back to the show in a sec, but you mentioned Dana being, you know, having a misunderstood a personality. I know Matt Sarah says, you know, they've been friends for a long time. I don't know how long you consider like close to Dana and stuff. I believe you 100% that his friends enjoy him. You hear stories about his generosity at the casinos and stuff to people that work. I believe 100% of that. I got to ask you, man. Like, I don't know your politics or if you're political at all. I mean, I'm just going to say this as a person of color. Like, do you even broach the subject of Dana White supporting Donald Trump when you're with them, or do you just like avoid that type of stuff and just have fun talking race? How do you get over that? Okay, I was going to say, how do you get over a friend doing supporting Trump? You just avoid it?
Yeah, I avoid that. I mean, you know what? Like, you know, I don't get involved in people's politics or their religious beliefs or anything like that. You know, and I think one thing about my personality is that I always try to find the better qualities of people, and I'm able to ignore the, you know, the negative qualities that I may find or whatever. I just like to find the good in people, and I'm never going to get in an argument about his politics or his religious beliefs or whatever like that, or how he feels about something. You know, me and Dana have a relationship. It's like, hey, listen, we just gonna have fun, and you know, we gonna party, and we gonna drink, and we gonna film it, and we gonna talk trash to each other. And that's what we do on the show.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good deal, though. That's a pretty good life. Do you guys find any people that you're impressed with, prospects in this season? That you don't have to name. Yeah. You don't have to name them, of course. But did you see some good talent?
Yeah, there's good talent everywhere. You got to understand that, like, when you go in these some obscure places, there's these pockets of fighters that are remarkable. They just don't have the resources and the exposure to get out, and I think this show is great for them that they can, you know, they just have to be able to show and prove when it comes time, and that's the one thing that, you know, some guys might not be able to do, but there's a lot of talented guys out there, and with this show they have a chance to prove it.
That's awesome. And you mentioned Rosa hopefully having a fight soon. You got anyone else, any trips you got to take to corner soon, any of your ATT teammates and students fighting? You got a corner soon?
Yeah, I'm actually going out to Phoenix. I'm leaving Friday for Phoenix. I'm out there with Walt Harris.
Oh, that's right.
And I'm out there with Walt Harris. And then I also, you know, Nina Anzaroff is a really good friend of mine. Even though I won't be cornering her, I also give her support. I help her out in training when I can. So they'll be fighting in Phoenix. And then after that, I'm with Daniel Jolly, who'll be fighting Khalil Roundtree in Houston. Mm-hmm. And then Tisha Torres also be fighting in Houston against Beck Rollins. So,
man, that's good.
I got a pretty busy schedule. Then right after that, I'll be full-time in camp with Tyron as he fights Wonderboy again.
Now, how are you guys gonna handle that? Do you know yet? Is he going to be bouncing around? Is he going to be in Milwaukee? Is he going to be in ACT again?
I think if it was up to Tyron would be at a different place every day training. He likes it like that. Yeah, I mean, he is the most, like, he'll call me and I'm like, man, where are you at? And he'll be like, oh, I'm in LA. Then the next day he's like, I'm in New York. And he's like, I'm back home. And I'm like, oh my goodness. But we're going to settle down a little bit and probably do most of it in Milwaukee. It's just, you know, we really like Duke, and Duke has so much to offer. And we'll probably do a lot of it in Milwaukee, and then we'll probably do some down here in Florida.
That's cool. Well, we're in Chicago here. I'm in Chicago. That's like 90 minutes away. I'll have to I'll have to shoot up there, and we'll have to check out camp and visit you there. One time
yeah, absolutely.
I went about a year and a half ago. I went to pro practice, and Duke was nice enough to let me work in and do some sparring and stuff, and people were nice enough not to just kill me. But I think you guys were there. I wasn't like doing interviews and stuff, so I didn't bug you. But I think I saw you and Eve Edwards with T Woods.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah.
But this time we'll arrange it. I'll come by. We'll say what's up, and we'll do some more stuff. It'll be good. But I got to ask before I let you go, how for Nina Ansaroff? I mean, this is such a heady time. Like, even after Amanda Nunes won, her partner, she's already hyping up like she always does Nina, you know, as the next person coming up. She's got a big fight. Is it a good thing to have all this excitement and momentum? Is it a little distracting? Like, is it tough, do you think, for her to like settle down and do what needs to be done, or is it just total motivation for her?
No, I think it's motivation for her. And what people don't know about Nina is what I see in Nina is this almost the same thing I see in Amanda as well, as far as like talent and ability. Like, Nina is so good, she hasn't been able to show it yet. It's almost like certain things just don't connect. Like, she's got it good on one end and a good on the other, but the connection that puts the package together just hasn't been there. And if she shows it in this fight, I promise you, I think we're looking at the next champion at 115 pounds.
Well, that's exciting. That's exciting, Coach. Thanks for spending so much time with us, man. I really appreciate it. Tell people where they can find you on the internet, man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that, man. And I just got to say one thing.
Yes, sir.
Hey, listen, everybody voting out there for the MMA awards, y'all holler at your boy, man. I helped train two champions, and they both successfully defended. Holler at me, man.
Okay.
MMA Awards. Y'all would not need to vote for me.
So Fighters Only Magazine, MMA Awards. We're talking Coach of the Year. Is that what we're talking?
Yeah, Coach of the Year.
Guys, get over to Fighters Only Magazine's website. Great magazine, great website. They do the biggest, for years now, the biggest MMA awards pretty much out there. And Coach Dean Thomas from ATT is nominated. You heard it. Head over there. Support your guy. He really is all enthusiasm aside. What you guys have been able to do down there is really remarkable, and the hand you have in so many high level camps definitely deserves a recognition. I'm glad you're starting to get some of what you deserve.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you having me on the show that I can speak my piece, man. Absolutely. You guys, you're real, man, for real talk.
Well, thank you so much, sir, man. We'll have you on anytime, and like I said, I'll holler at you soon. We'll hopefully catch up in Milwaukee, man.
All right, man. Thank you, man. See you later.
Take care, Coach. Bye. So we just had ATT's Dean Thomas, phenomenal, phenomenal fighter, one of the best, most well-rounded fighters of his generation, turned into one of the best, most accomplished, hands-on, successful coaches of this new generation over at ATT. A lot of fun talking with him. Great mind. He's always forthright, whatever we're asking him, whether it's his politics of his friends or mindsets of opponents and his own fighters. So really cool. He's got a lot going on. Like, some people will blow steam, like, I'm kind of busy, I don't know if we can make time, this and that. And some people really are busy. Dean Thomas is really busy. You know, a guy like him, a guy like Mike Brown, really busy. And those guys are always around. This is Coach Dean Thomas' second time on the show. We really appreciate that. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal guy. A lot of fun. And, yeah, we'll have to keep you guys posted. We're not far from Duke Rufus' camp. Mike Dice has been up there without me, I think, a few weeks ago. And he met Tyron Woodley and did some work there. We'll head up there. We'll see what we can get for you guys, whether it's some video, some more interviews. It's an interesting, really solid camp, not just with the bodies that they have a lot of high level athletes, but the technique going on there is pretty impressive. You know, I was there about a year and a half ago. Actually, I think it was CM Punk's, Phil Brooks's first week training at over there, and he was a very nice guy. He wasn't working in with the team in terms of sparring or doing anything, but he was there already, and I got to learn a little bit from Duke Rufus. All technique, man. It's all technique. They don't just put a bunch of bangers in there and have them beat each other up. They got a lot of technique there. Very impressive. So we'll have to head over to Rufus Sport, and there's a couple other places we're hoping to get to in this new year as well. We'll keep you posted. But that's a big fight. It actually moves me over. Before we leave, we'll touch very, very briefly on a couple other topics. So Dean Thomas mentioned that they're going to be doing Tyron Woodley, UFC welterweight champions, most of his camp, perhaps, in Milwaukee at Rufus Sport. they're both ATT members, but Tyron Woodley, as you may or may not know, like he mentioned, like Dean Thomas mentioned, likes to train all over, and he's done a lot of work over the last couple of years, several years, at Rufus Sport. They have a lot of great welterweights. For a long time, Robbie Lawler was the welterweight champion, and he's out of ATT. Tyron Woodley's out of ATT. Listen, man, it's kind of tough to have a teammate that you're in the same division, you're both fighting for the same spot. They ultimately did fight. That's who Tyron Woodley, Robbie Lawler is. That's who Tyron Woodley fought and beat in order to become champion. So he had a lot of success working with his ATT coaches like Dean Thomas, along with Rufus Sport coaches over at Rufus Sport. That fight got made this week, right? That's the news. Stephen Thompson, Tyron Woodley 2 is announced for UFC 209. There's been a ton of talk. There was a ton of talk between these two gentlemen before their first fight happened. Tyron Woodley was on here before he met with Robbie Lawler. We're already talking about Stephen Thompson. Stephen Thompson was on here saying, you know, that Tyron Woodley was basically avoiding the fight. He got the fight. They had an amazing, amazing battle. One of the closest high-level fights, back and forth, hardest to score fights that I can remember in recent memories. That was at UFC 205 in Manhattan, in Madison Square Garden. They fought to a draw, an actual draw, for five rounds, like a Rocky movie type of thing. Both men had their points. Tyron Woodley looked like he almost separated Stephen Thompson from consciousness several times. Stephen Thompson felt, probably rightly, that he won more rounds, but the rounds that Woodley won were, you know, he won with damage. So just incredibly hard to score a draw. I want Damian Maia to get a title shot. It's like yesterday, but that aside, this is the right fight to happen. Stephen Thompson, you can't say Stephen Thompson didn't earn the first title shot. You can't say he didn't earn. If you don't think he won the fight, you can't say he didn't earn a rematch. So that fight is happening, and we couldn't be more excited for it. That's announced as the main event. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong about that, but I can't wait for that one. I'm actually hoping to get, we'll see. We're going to go to a couple places, and we'll see if we can get over to Rufus Sport. We'll see if we can get a hold of Stephen Thompson as well. That's just a spectacular fight. What a contrast in styles. Another really interesting item that happened this week, not a fight announcement, but it's connected to a recent fight, a fight that we've been talking a lot about, which is Ronda Rousey's last fight. She came back after a year, and she lost, of course, to Amanda Nunes. I think it was a really bad matchup. I agreed with ATT coaches. I didn't think it was going to go that fast. But she fell. She fell hard. She got dominated, worse than she got dominated a year prior in her first defeat to Holly Holm. So she's down and out, right? And one of the more venomous rivalries, that is, at least rivalries through the media, because these two have never fought, unfortunately, has in MMA in recent history has been between Ronda Rousey, longtime bantamweight champion, and Chris Cyborg Justino, longtime and still reigning world featherweight champion. Right? They were in Strikeforce together. Eventually, both in the UFC together. The fight hasn't happened, but they've exchanged so much vitriol over the years. Stark change in the tone in that relationship, right? We had Jason Perillo, Cyborg's coach, last week, and he said, you know what, these two should train together. That fight's over. That's done with for any number of reasons. They can train together. Ronda released a kind of a statement. She posted something on her Instagram, and it was a quote from the author of Harry Potter books. I forget the woman's name, unfortunately. Monster author. I can't believe I'm forgetting it. But it was a quote basically about using rock bottom as a foundation. So here it is. And so rock bottom became the solid foundation in which I rebuilt my life. J.K. Rowling. Rhonda, you know, posted that on her Instagram. Chris Cyborg responded. And usually when we have Chris Cyborg responding to Ronda Rousey, or Ronda Rousey responding to Chris Cyborg, it gets ugly fast. This was not ugly. Cyborg wrote on her own Instagram, "Ronda Rousey, I was sad to see the loss of the sports star, but you have so much ahead of you and are blessed with the financial security to pursue all your passions. You opened the door for more promotion and grew into a sport icon. Enjoy the next chapter of life and know you've got amazing opportunities to continue changing the world. Hashtag Rowdy Revolution." Like seeing that. Would have loved to have seen them fight. That never happens. That's all right. There's a life beyond the world of beating each other up. And when people are no longer rivals in the ring as athletes, they still got to go on as human beings. So it's nice to see that respect of shared humanity from Chris Cyborg towards Ronda Rousey after so many angry words between the both of them for so long. With that, we will end the show. Again, I've been here with our producer, Richard, and without Mike Dice, my co-host. Mike will be back next week. I'm very excited for that. He's been missed this week, but we were really, really lucky to have Dean Thomas on from American Top Team talking about his student Amanda Nunes and her big win, talking about his fighter Tyron Woodley and his upcoming bout in that camp and so many other things. Make sure you go and consider voting for him. And voting generally for all the cool topics and categories they got at Fighters Only Magazine for their 2016 year-end awards. He's up for Coach of the Year. He certainly deserves consideration. Check him out and looking for a fight on UFC's YouTube channel. Him, Matt Serra, Dana White get kind of crazy while looking for some top talent every week. It's a great show. It's a lot of fun. I criticize Dana White a lot for things he deserves criticism for. One of the things he doesn't deserve criticism for is putting on a great show. He does. As a promoter, he's probably the best fight promoter of our lifetime. And he puts on a fun show on YouTube. It's worth watching, whatever you think about different things. And we'll continue talking about those. It's a fun thing. He puts on a good show there. And it is entertaining. And you do want to go hang out with him at his place in Maine when you see the type of toys they got, right? In any case, I've been Elias Cepeda for Extra Rounds Podcast. We'll be back next week with a new episode. We'll let you know on Twitter. You can follow us at Extra Rounds. We'll let you know what guests we have coming up for that episode. Remember, on this episode, in the audio version that's going to be uploaded later tonight, it's Wednesday right now, Wednesday, January 11th, an exclusive sit-down interview with Yair Rodriguez from my host, Mike Dice, my co-host, Mike Dice. A really good conversation he had with Yair as he heads into the biggest fight of his life, a main event, UFC Fight Night main event against the legend, former two-time, multiple-time world champion BJ Penn, who's coming back. You want to check that out. Check it out on iTunes, Google Play, any of the other places you listen to your audio podcast. Thanks so much for watching live. If you have, please stick with us. If you do listen to iTunes, you're going to check out this interview. It's going to be at the end of this week's episode. You can scroll all the way to the end to hear Yair Rodriguez's conversation with Mike Dice. After you listen to it, if you like it, please give us 5 stars on iTunes. That helps us out a lot. Feel free to send us messages at Extra Rounds on Twitter. We'll holler back. I didn't get to a question from one of our listeners, Brad Stein, who sent in a really interesting technical question. I want to give it the time it deserves. So we'll basically open with that next week. I can promise you that. I'll talk with Mike. I'm sure we can make it happen. Your questions do get read, and we do answer them, and they're a lot of fun. So again, thanks so much for listening, guys, and we'll see you next time.